Welcome to Think Again with L. Nathan Hare, sponsored by the Community Action Organization of Erie County. If you would like to participate on today's program, call now, 803-1520. That's 803-1520.
All right, here we go. Think Again. Think Again. Welcome to our topical discussion program, sponsored by the Community Action Organization of Western New York, still fighting the war on poverty, now in our 54th year. Each week, we talk to you about issues, events, and trends affecting you right here and right now in Buffalo and the Western New York community, and in fact, connecting you to communities all across the country. I'm your host, L. Nathan Hare, President and CEO of the Community Action Organization. Make us a part of your Saturday every Saturday at ESPN 1520 AM on your dial from 11 o'clock to 12 noon each week. Now, today's program is live, so you can call and you can join our discussion. I hope that you will. Our number here again is 803-1520. That's 803-1520. And so, of course, we had our debate on Tuesday of this week, October 15th. But that didn't seem to be enough for this week. We had to get Mick Mulvaney, you know, testifying to the public that we sell foreign aid to people based on political favors that they're willing to do for us. We'll get into that in the course of today's program. In an article written by Mark Sumner entitled Mick Mulvaney, and I'll tell you who he is in a second, admits to taking bribes and soliciting additional bribes while destroying the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is written in the Daily Coast. I really wanted to talk about the debate, but I just want to talk a little bit about this Mulvaney thing for just a second. Mick Mulvaney is the current acting White House chief of staff, but most recently, prior to that appointment, he was the head of the Office of Management and Budget, and he was the interim at the same time director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Now, Mulvaney was given leadership of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau even though he stated that he hated the very existence of the Bureau. Kind of like Scott Pruitt, who hated the very existence of the Environmental Protection Agency, was appointed by Trump to be the secretary of the Environmental Protection Agency. That may not seem to make any sense whatsoever, but we can see that this is the pattern of the Trump administration. Let me just read you his words. He said that he promised that he would stop enforcing rules about discriminatory auto loans and hide complaints so that bankers don't have to worry. He's a former congressman from South Carolina, the same place that Lindsey Graham hails from. He told 1,300 bankers and lending industry officials at an American Bankers Association conference in Washington, he said, if you're a lobbyist who never gave us money, I didn't talk to you. If you're a lobbyist who gave us money, I might talk to you. He actually told the bankers that he won't listen to them if they do not bribe him to do so. He didn't just encourage the bankers to bribe him if they wanted their way. He told them to go out and buy themselves more Republicans. This is the Trump-appointed man who stood at a White House press meeting earlier this week that the White House staff called and that they had at least a day to prepare for, and said that President Trump had told him that the corruption related to the Democratic National Committee server, he said absolutely no question about it, that it but that's it, and that's why we held up the money. Let me just say that correctly again. He said the President Trump told him that the corruption related to the Democratic National Committee server. He said absolutely it was related to that, and no question about it, and that's why we held up the money. ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Jonathan Carl then asked him, so the demand for the investigation into the Democrats was part of the reason that you ordered that Trump ordered you to withhold funding to Ukraine? And Mulvaney said, look back to what happened in 2016. Certainly, was a part of the thing that he was worried about in corruption with the nation. And that is absolutely equivalent. So Carl pressed him and he said, what you described is a quid pro quo. It is funding will not flow unless the investigation into the Democrat server happens as well. And Mulvaney's response was, we do that all the time with foreign policy. We were holding up money at the same time for, what was it? The Northern Triangle countries. We were holding up aid at the Northern Triangle countries so that they would change their policies on administration. Now, I'm speaking his exact words so you understand how these people talk. Okay. He says, so this is what we are seeing is a Trump appointed den of thieves acting like a den of thieves. So let me just get to the debate real quickly. When we looked at the previous debates, this was the fourth set of debates on October. I can hear you barely. Okay. Hold on, guys. I'm turning up my volume. Nope. Okay. We got to switch headphones. Guys, don't go away. I'm going to be with you in 1 second. Switch to that headphone over there.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.99%, APR 4.08%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 1.25% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
What would you like to be better at?
Dancing.
Poker.
Yoga.
According to a study, CVS customers are better than most at something important, staying on prescriptions, which tends to make you healthier. So get a free prescription savings review, plus earn up to 50 extra bucks rewards each year for filling. Because of the things you could be better at, staying healthy tops them all. Treat yourself well at CVS. Terms and conditions apply. Not all prescriptions eligible. See our pharmacist or cvs.com/rxsavings or /rxrewards.
Would you like to increase your home's value? Do you want to lower your energy bills? Are you in need of affordable financing for your next home improvement project? The CAO Home Improvement Resource Program can help. Just come to one of their monthly HIRP orientation sessions every first and third Wednesday of the month at two convenient locations. HIRP staff will help identify the resources you need to get financed, and they'll even help you with completing your application. Now, you won't know what you qualify for until you call 332-3773. That's 332-3773. Learn about all the home improvement programs you may be eligible for and ask about the affordable financing program that can help turn your house into your dream home. Call 332-3773 for more info. It's the Home Improvement Resource Program, restoring value to neighborhoods across Erie County, one house at a time. Brought to you by the Community Action Organization of Erie County.
All right. Welcome back, folks. We got through our little technical difficulties, but I think we're okay. I can hear you, and hopefully you all will be able to hear me. But just talking about the debate real quickly, I wanted to first kind of review the fact that over the first three debates, there seemed to be some consistency in terms of what was actually being talked about. Most of the time, they talked about health care. They talked about immigration. They talked about domestic issues. Those are the three core things that got the most attention. There were plenty of subjects that seemed to be important to Democrats that candidates didn't talk that much about, like the makeup of the Supreme Court, the opioid crisis, even talking directly about Donald Trump himself. But when I looked at the debates, the previous debates before this one, October 15th, they broke down into 10 subject areas: healthcare, immigration, racial equality, climate change, foreign policy, guns, and strategy and electability. There's a little bit of talk about trade, a little bit of talk about the economy, a little bit of talk about criminal justice. But in the debate that took place on October 15th, and this is a debate that had 12 people in the debate, so it was a little, you know, difficult, you know, for you to be able to sort of get the flow of everybody that was participating in the debate. But in order, so not with how many minutes, the Vox report talked about how many minutes were given to each of these subject areas. But what I did when I watched the debate is I just kind of tracked what was talked about in order. The first thing that was talked about was impeachment, and we'll talk about this in a second. Tulsi Gabbard seemed to feel that there needs to be a bipartisan call for Trump's impeachment before an impeachment call goes forward. I think we ought to talk about that. Then they talked about Medicaid for all, the cost of Medicaid for all. Then they talked about guaranteed jobs for every working age person. Interesting concept. They talked about accountable capitalism and multinational companies. They talked about universal income, then income inequality. They talked a little bit about tax loopholes, but just a little bit. They talked about the concept of a wealth tax versus an income tax versus tax credits as a way to reduce the income inequality. So I want to talk a little bit about that if we have time. They talked about homelessness and childhood poverty. And only 10th along the way in this discussion did they start talking about the abandonment of the Kurds, which seemed like such a momentous thing that that would have been early in the conversation. But the conversation was led by the moderators, Anderson Cooper and the folks from CNN. And that's just the way that that's the order in which they asked the questions. But I thought it odd that they didn't talk about the abandonment of the Kurds until 10th, the 10th subject that was discussed. Then they talked about Vladimir Putin and corruption. They talked about gun violence and assault weapons. Again, not a lot of talk about it, but just a bit. Then they talked a little bit about the opioid crisis. Then the age of a president, you know, what's an acceptable age or is there an acceptable limit on the higher age of a president? They talked about the idea of breaking up big tech companies. Beto O'Rourke said something I thought interesting. He talked about treating these big tech companies as publishing companies rather than treating them as utilities, which would allow you to be able to tax and regulate them in a different way than we're doing right now. Then he talked about women's reproductive health rights. This was 16th of the 17 things that were discussed in these debates. The second last thing that was discussed was women's reproductive health rights. But Kamala Harris did a good job of making it a larger part of the discussion, even though it came up late in the debate. Then they talked about Supreme Court expansion or term limits. And I'm not sure that I'm a fan of Supreme Court expansion, but at least there was a discussion in this debate about what to do about the fact that Donald Trump has packed a court with people that seem not to be devoted to the Constitution, but who seem to be devoted to the conservative premises, the political conservative premises, not even the value conservative premises that they claim that they are focused on. Do we need bipartisan support? And I got just a minute or so. Do we need bipartisan support for voting on articles of impeachment? To assert that voting for articles of impeachment has to be a bipartisan affair is to surrender the impeachment inquiry to the will of the Republicans. The president has committed violations of the election law on television with no constructive response by the Republicans at all, not just at the presidential level or at the executive appointment level, but at the congressional level. Even in the state houses across the country, virtually no constructive response to public violations of election law and campaign finance laws. As long as the Republicans feel they can hold the line without consequence from their constituents, they will never vote against this president, even if he does shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. They just won't vote against him. So waiting on the Republicans to move on impeachment, to me, makes no sense. even if the president is not convicted, getting all of the evidence on the table in front of everybody, I think that's where the win is. Now, listen, I really wanted to spend a little bit of time talking to you about Medicare for All. All I can really share with you until we talk about it with through our callers. Was that Rambo Jim on the phone? Sorry, Rambo, I don't know. We must have done something to cut you off. Give us a call right back. We didn't mean to cut you off. But since there's nobody here, let me quickly help you with this issue of Medicaid for All. Anderson Cooper and so many other reporters always cast this as an issue of, will you have to raise taxes, yes or no? Because they really want the headline that you said you would raise taxes and then get everybody all animated about the fact that you would raise taxes. Here's what you need to understand. If you can do something that ensures that everybody has health care and that people have that health care without having to pay premiums, without having to pay co-pays, without having to pay deductibles, and if doing that causes you to have to raise taxes, but your out-of-pocket expenses are significantly lower, that makes sense. For example, we have FICA is the vehicle that we use to pay for Medicaid and to pay for Social Security. If we didn't do this through payroll taxes, most people would wind up being improperly not well-funded for their old age. Now, I'm not old enough to remember the Great Depression. I'm not that old, but I know people who were alive during the Great Depression who were older people unable to work in 1929, 1930, 1936. And those people found themselves in an extraordinarily vulnerable position in their lives because there was no money coming in from any place. We created Social Security so that we could ensure a economic future for every single working age person going forward from the early 1930s going on. That was the purpose of the insurance. So doing the same thing, if we essentially figured out what we needed to pay in order to ensure that we had the $3.4 trillion that we need to be able to pay for health care in this country, we should do that and do that collectively. I can't really give enough treatment to that right now. We have Rambo Jim holding on, and I want to give him his first shout out. He's probably going to beat me up, you know, about Mick Mulvaney and try to help me to understand that Mulvaney was being a really extraordinary citizen, confessing to the world that the Trump administration was trading American foreign aid. Jim, do I have you on the phone? Rambo, do I have you on the phone? Did I lose him? I can see him on the machine. Let's try Rambo one more time. Rambo, are you out there? You guys got to help me. Rambo's not connecting. Ah, I hear something. Rambo, is that you? Oh, okay. Sorry, Rambo, just hang on. We're doing some technical work here. Maybe it's the fact that it's going into the fall. Or maybe they're worried about what you got to say. I don't know. Let me try it again. Rambo, are you there? All right, Rambo, we'll try it one more time. Are you out there? Okay, so Rambo, I'm going to keep going, and we're going to stay on the line. We're going to try to get you connected. But let me just tell you a little bit about this Medicare for All situation. It cost, according to the reports that I've read, roughly $3.4 to $3.5 trillion to pay for the entire healthcare system of this country. What I tried to do is to figure out how much of that is paid for by the government already through existing government taxes, and how much additional taxes would you have to collect in order for you to be able to pay for the entire $3.4, $3.5 trillion healthcare system. So I looked at total income for the country. We're talking about something like $17.5 trillion in personal income that we earn in this country. When I look at the healthcare system, employers pay roughly $1.9 trillion of that $3.4 billion. Medicare pays for about $600 billion of that cost. Medicaid pays for close to $400 billion of that cost. That's roughly $1 trillion paid for by Medicaid and Medicare from current taxes already being paid. States share roughly $200 billion of the Medicaid cost. So that takes you to about $1.2 trillion of the cost of that $3.4. And then out of pocket, we pay the rest. So the employers pay of the $3.4 trillion, roughly $1.1 trillion is already being paid for by government, so that leaves $2.3. Employers pay $1.9 of that $2.3 that's left, so that leaves about $400 billion that has to be paid for some other way. So if we talked about raising enough federal revenue to eliminate the private out-of-pocket premium and copay cost, what we'd have to do is we'd have to come up with, I'm calculating $1.1 trillion, because in the employer portion of healthcare payments, there are copays that are being paid by individuals. So that overall cost is coming out of individuals' pockets is $1.1 trillion. If you take that as a percentage of $17.5 trillion, it comes to 14.1%. If you take 14.1%, if you had an income of $50,000 for your household, that would cost you about $7,000 a year. But the family would already be paying 7.85% in FICA holdings, or roughly $3,900 a year. So the net increase in taxes for a household would be somewhere around $3,100 per household who has an income of $50,000 a year. Compare that to what you would be paying for health insurance premiums, copays, and deductibles right now. That would mean if you adopt the model that I'm talking about, it would mean that every single American would have health care without having to worry about health insurance. In other words, if you increased your FICA cost from 7.885%, add on to that 6.28%, in other words, make it 14.1%, every single person in the country would have health care without anybody having to pay any additional health insurance premiums, unless you wanted to buy some wraparound insurance for, you know, something that's outside of the, defend your life stream, you know, kind of health care. In other words, if you wanted insurance that would pay for, you know, a new nose or a new chin or something like that, you'd buy wraparound insurance for that. But I think that if you think about this Medicare for All in that context, at least you could make a decision about whether or not it made sense to you. If you have an increased cost of $3,000 in taxes, but you have a decrease in whatever it is you normally pay now for health insurance, deductibles, and copays, if that equation works out in your mind, it probably makes more sense then for you to be going for a Medicaid for All model. Is it Rambo that we have on the? Let me try Rambo again. Rambo, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
There you are. How are you doing, Rambo?
Good.
You've been trying to beat us up and whatnot, right?
No, not so much to beat you up, but I got to tell you something, Nathan. The other night at the Trump rally, Trump dropped a hint. He's up to something. He gave a shout out to the guy that he said is in charge of recovering the 33,000 missing emails of Hillary Clinton.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
is that the same guy that says
the
guy that
the shout out?
Is this the guy who has the server in Ukraine? He's holding on to it in Ukraine.
I'm assuming. I'm not.
Jim.
Listen, Jim.
I want you to just think for a second. If Donald Trump actually had the so-called 33,000 emails, which already exist. They're already in the hands of the federal government, already been studied by the FBI, by the justice. All that's already done. These are not new emails. They're not emails that nobody knows about. They're already emails that are in the hands of the government already. So this is
3,000 emails have already been
have
recovered.
Already been discovered long time ago, have been studied a long time ago, have been demonstrated, whatever it was in there that anybody had anything to say about has already been said. If Donald Trump actually had something that was new, I guarantee you, we'd be hearing this. He'd be throwing it in your face all day long, every day. We're not talking about impressions. Every time Donald Trump lies, that's an impression. We're not talking about lying assertions. We're talking about actually having something in your hand. If Donald Trump had something in his hand, he would put it out there. But he doesn't have anything in his hand. Just like he keeps telling people, you know, I want you, Ukraine, to investigate the Biden thing. Then you ask yourself, well, what's the Biden thing? He never tells you because he doesn't have anything other than throwing it out there on the table as if there's something that needs to be investigated that isn't. It's what Matt refers to as red meat for his base.
Well, let me tell you what he said.
Okay.
He said, gave the guy a shout out, said, you know, he's the guy that's digging up these 33,000 supposedly missing email. And then he said, immediately after that, he said, and some people, I guess, you know, they think they're going to get away with everything for as long as they want. I mean, I'm paraphrasing what he said. And then he said, but maybe that'll change in the near future, in the not-too-distant future. And then he moved on to something else.
Rambo.
It just seemed, the impression I got, he was dropping a hint. That's all I'm saying.
Rambo. He dropped a hint during the 2016 election when he claimed that he had sent somebody from on his paycheck, he sent somebody to Hawaii to find the actual birth certificate of Barack Obama. He said, I saw him on the air. He said, I sent some people down there and they found some things and you'd be really shocked, you know, by what you'd find out. It's all right there. That's another one of his so-called hints. It never emerged because he was lying. That's what Donald Trump does. He just lies. But he puts things out there as a tantalizing little thread. And then he gets people who want to believe the nonsense that comes out of Donald Trump's mouth. You start thinking, oh, well, there may be something there. And then weeks will go by. Nothing will happen because he doesn't have anything to happen. Think about the logic of this. Why would the Ukraine have acquired the Democratic National Committee's server? How would they have acquired it in the first place? If they hacked the server, what would the Ukraine do with it? The Ukraine was trying to become a part of the European Union. They were trying to become a part of the Western Alliance. Why would they do something to damage their ability to be a part of the thing that they were struggling to become a part of? That just doesn't make sense. This man is just lying to you. And for some reason, people in this country are willing to accept the nonsense that comes out of this guy's mouth. But I know that there are things that you and I can agree about, James, and I want to ask you a question. Do you like ice cream?
Yeah.
And you know what? I like ice cream, too. So you and I agree on at least one thing, right? So we got a platform that we can stand on.
I can't believe you asked me that. You know what goes good with ice cream?
What's that?
I swear to God, I'm not making this up. I experimented the other morning.
Don't tell me it's Donald Trump.
No. Okay. Buy yourself a bottle of Chivas Regal Scotch.
Oh, my God.
Then you pour in the ice cream. You take a spoon and mix it up real good. Oh, Nathan, out of this world, scotch and ice cream mixed together.
Well, you know, when I was younger, I'd probably go for that. But I haven't drunk since I was like 36, 37 years old.
Now so. I got to hope my doctor's not listening because he's going to chew me out.
And he should. What are you doing? You're messing up the ice cream with Chef is Regal. All right. Thanks a lot, James. I appreciate you, man.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you soon. Okay. We have Donnie in Middleport out here. Donnie, how are you doing out there?
Yeah, good. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I have a couple questions quick.
Sure.
About this Medicaid.
For all?
Health care for all.
Right.
Why is it in this country, since the 19, late 40s, but through the 50s, 60s, 70s, right up to now, why do we feel that as long as the wool's pulled over our eyes, but the wealthy, there's a difference between rich and wealthy. Why do the wealthy feel that they don't have to pay taxes on anything? And we remember clearly back in the 1960s and 50s and early 70s, around 75 to 77, we had plentiful jobs.
Yep.
We made everything that we need.
Yep.
Our children had music programs, linguistic programs. Our schools had lights on. The tiles weren't falling down from the school. We had buses, everything.
Yep.
And since Reagan, we drink this poison and think it's okay to have a country without funding.
Because the people that own our media are the same people that Reagan was in bed with, and they basically sold this country out to the wealthiest people in this country. They spent every day from 1954 to 1979 trying to find a way to get enough political muscle to reverse all of the gains in the economic gains as a result of civil rights and expansion of opportunity for people in the lower classes in this country. That was their game plan. They hired Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan made that stuff possible through changes in our tax laws, changes in depreciation, changes in capital gains and so on, and changes in regulation. And we have just continued to allow ourselves to be seduced into doing what these people say is in the best interest of the people with money, on the premise that if they get better, they will send some of that money our way. That simply is not true. The idea that money is going to trickle down from the top. If you put more money in the hands of the people that have money, they will take that money and invest it in things that create more jobs and more opportunity. That has been so completely proven untrue that, I mean, that's like trying to say that it's true that 2 + 3, you know, equals 2. You know, that's just dumb. And so this is what we're faced with. The problem is that the people who are being most disaffected by these policies, for some reason or other, they feel that their opportunity for them to become upper class or the top wealthiest classes in the country are going to be marginalized if you have policies that are more focused on the middle class and the lower middle class income earners of this country. For some reason or other, they seem to feel threatened by that. I don't know what the basis of that threat is. I have said many times, I think that a lot of this is that you have a population of people in this country that is so afraid that this country is going to become a majority minority country, that they will support anybody who will defend that gate, even if it hurts them in their wallets and hurts them in their lives, hurts them in their environments and in so many other ways. I don't really know how to put my arms or wrap my mind around all of this, but there is something that underlies why this country's majority population keeps going in a direction that is the antithesis of what's in their self-interest.
Yeah, part of that too. When I was in the service, even in the late 80s, just pockets of this country, I mean, if you look at in the Midwest, in the South, they look like dead zones. You can see it. It's actually dead zones.
Right.
And it looked like taking pictures out of Tobacco Road.
Yep.
And the country's slowly looking like Appalachia. We don't want to admit it, but you look at it. Even in California, it looks like Appalachia.
And that's why these people that we refer to as these rural Americans, or that John refers to as the flyover people and so on, that's why those people feel forgotten. But what I'm trying to help us to understand is there have been many elected or proposed elected officials who have wanted to do things to help that population of people, but they wind up having their voices snuffed out because these same rural people, semi-rural people, are the ones that support people like Donald Trump, who, although he may be willing to ensure that the country doesn't become majority minority, maybe that's what, you know, his footprint is, but he's doing things that are absolutely opposed to the interest of the miners, of the farmers, and so on around this country. They should be throwing these guys out, and they should be getting people in office that are going to support their interests. Set these, you know, minority-majority issues aside. You have economic interests that need to be upheld. But, Donnie, I got to run.
Yep. Oh.
Oh, yeah. So real, go ahead.
Can you get a comment on General Motors? I think General Motors is going to actually close down one day because it seems like they don't want to treat their employees right because it'll be going like Studebaker and other companies that go so far as to let's throw in the towel.
Well, I think you're right. General Motors may find out that maybe there is no such thing as being too big to fail. They may be too big and will fail. Right. All right. I got to run, man. Thank you, brother.
All right.
Talk to you soon. So we're going to take our last break and then help me out here. I think it's Ron, then Kevin, then John. Great. So if you all stick with us, well, we will sit aside at a break here at Think Again. Think Again.
Would you like to increase your home's value? Do you want to lower your energy bills? Are you in need of affordable financing for your next home improvement project? The CAO Home Improvement Resource Program can help. Just come to one of their monthly HIRP orientation sessions every first and third Wednesday of the month at two convenient locations. HIRP staff will help identify the resources you need to get financed, and they'll even help you with completing your application. Now, you won't know what you qualify for until you call 332-3773. That's 332-3773. Learn about all the home improvement programs you may be eligible for and ask about the affordable financing program that can help turn your house into your dream home. Call 332-3773 for more info. It's the Home Improvement Resource Program, restoring value to neighborhoods across Erie County, one house at a time. Brought to you by the Community Action Organization of Erie County.
It's open enrollment, Fred. Time to compare plans.
Oh, Alice, we're fine with what we have.
Well, that's what the Johnsons thought until they tried Medicare's new Plan Finder.
The Johnsons, huh?
We saved on our prescription costs.
And got extra benefits.
Come on, Fred, maybe we'll find something better.
Plans change every year. Use the new Plan Finder at Medicare.gov to compare health and drug plans. Open enrollment ends December 7th.
What do you know? Comparing plans really pays.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Okay, you know how it feels when you've saved enough for that long-awaited home addition? Now imagine an addition on that addition. Whoa. That's the feeling with Capital One, where a new savings account earns an interest rate five times the national average. That's right, five times. As represented by five times more singers. This is banking reimagined. Capital One, what's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Rate comparison based on FDIC national rate. Capital One NA member FDIC.
All day, every day. This is Buffalo's home for ESPN Radio. 50,000 watt ESPN 1520.
Today. He had a meeting with Democrats at the White House. He lashed out at Nancy Pelosi. He called her a third-rate politician. He called them communists. And he had what Nancy Pelosi described as a meltdown, which isn't even really a meltdown anymore. Trump didn't have a meltdown. He had a Wednesday. There's nothing left to melt. The White House claims Trump was measured, factual, and decisive, not hysterical. So now I don't know who to believe, but this clip seems to suggest he might not be telling the truth.
The best way to pressure him is a strong bipartisan resolution, such as passed the House, to undo the damage he has done.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
We witnessed on the part of the president was a meltdown.
It's right there. The president is. So the president doesn't like this idea that people know he had a meltdown. So he tweeted a photo from the meeting, and that's what he tweeted with the caption, "Nervous Nancy's Unhinged Meltdown." They're yelling at each other. He really should be writing headlines for the Inquirer instead of running the country. Pelosi and the Democrats walked out of the meeting, which is supposed to be about Syria. Trump is upset because the House today voted in a bipartisan and overwhelming way to condemn his decision to pull our troops out of Syria, leaving the Kurds to fend for themselves in a hopeless situation. Trump now is stuck because basically he gave the president of Turkey a green light to kill these people we promised to protect. And even his fellow Republicans are furious. Some are publicly demanding he reverse the decision, but he can't because that would be admitting he was wrong, which he doesn't do. So today he tried to do damage control. The White House released a letter. This is a letter written by Trump to his strongman buddy, President Erdogan. And I'm not sure what this was supposed to prove other than he's crazy, but this is a real letter from the President of the United States. We did not alter this in any way. Trump writes, "Dear Mr. President, let's work out a good deal." As if he's running a Honda dealership or something. "You don't want to be responsible for slaughtering thousands of people, and I don't want to be responsible for destroying the Turkish economy. And I will." And then he goes on for a while. And the big finish is, "History will look upon you favorably if you get this done the right and humane way. It will look upon you forever as the devil if good things don't happen. Don't be a tough guy. Don't be a fool. I'll call you later. Sincerely, Donald Trump."
Now, that was not made up. That is exactly what was in that letter. Okay. Listen, let me get Ron on first and get his thoughts. Ron, how are you doing out there?
Hear me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, okay. I can't hear some noise here a little bit. Okay, a couple of things. You talk about beating the proverbial dead horse over these 33,000, now it's 33, I thought it was 30,
yeah, right.
1,000 emails. The first of all, they never tell you what is supposed to be in them. In fact, there was nothing supposed to be in them. Let's assume there were 30 or 33,000 emails. The problem was not necessarily what was said in them, but that they were done on a private server and violated national security issues. Now, that would be an issue if she had won the election. She didn't win the election.
Right.
She's a private citizen, and being stupid, if you did that, being stupid is not being criminal. Yet they keep beating this thing over the head. I mean, they keep beating the proverbial dead horse. It makes absolutely no sense to do that.
Yep.
But is that going to be one of their key election things now, that they're going to talk about the 33,000 emails that don't really exist, but that they keep saying?
Right,
which
right.
The primary issue being that she violated national security issues.
Right.
That would be fine if she was president, I mean, to make it an issue, but she's not the president. She never was.
Right. But see, this is what Trump does, and this is what the Republicans have now learned to do. Every time they feel threatened that their behavior is going to become exposed as being corrupt and behavior that is anti-American, what they do is they take either that thing or something else and throw it out there with no evidence, no support. Just throw it out there and say, yeah, but look at this over here. You know, Hillary Clinton, she was in Kenya at the same time that there were some people in Malawi that were throwing some rocks at people at Burundi. And, you know, they'll come up with crazy stuff like that and then get the media to go along with it. Notice how the media never says, every time they throw this Biden thing on the table, the media just repeats it. They don't say, Mr. President or Mr. whoever, you know, was saying that, you keep making this statement about Biden. What is it about Biden that you are making an allegation about? Because
it's not even about him anyway. It's about his son. And
right.
He supposedly has tried to suppress a corruption investigation. They've got the dates wrong. And it very seldom is mentioned that Biden got the guy who was the crooked guy who the Republicans say
right.
cleared his son. He got that guy fired.
Okay. Right.
Why would he do that if the guy cleared his son, if there was really any corruption?
Exactly.
Anyway, so I want to switch gears a little bit here. I didn't get it at the time last week because, you know, you get pressed for time.
Right.
The debate between Mark Poloncarz and Lynn Dixon on October 9th.
Uh-huh.
Did you watch that?
I didn't get to watch it, but I read all of the transcripts of it.
Okay, you know, I don't know whether it's because Dixon used to be a media person and she's like a cutesy and they all like her. You know, it was an hour-long debate, 49 minutes into that debate, before it was a viewer question brought up the idea that she's basically a little more than a Chris Collins clone, that three of his top aides are running her campaign. And still, nobody asked. She's portraying herself as this single mommy, you know, like everybody else. Where's she getting all this money? I've never seen a challenger, a Republican. Well, she says she's not a Republican. Where's she getting all this money from? I see equal number, maybe a little more number of ads that she's running against Poloncarz. Usually the same thing about he raised taxes and all that. I didn't think it would be that biased a debate. To me, the way the media portrayed this thing, they kind of soft pedal that whole thing.
Well, you know, there's a lot of money that is available to Republicans and people that affiliate with the Republicans, that you would think for a particular race, why would so much money be involved in that kind of a race? We have races now that used to be $100,000 to pay for the race, and now it takes $2 million to pay for the race.
Yeah, for a county executive in a small-sized city, it's crazy.
Right.
I just hope people realize that they're not taking that propaganda. I hope people, particularly in the city, the Republicans always do this thing. They don't run anybody in the city because they figure if they run any type of credible opposition in the city, that the African American population will turn out. So you notice how they're not running too many people in the city,
right, to suppress that vote.
They suppress,
right,
the black vote that way, and then so I hope African Americans get out and vote. I know Byron Brown's not running, and other black officials are not running this time. But get out, otherwise you're going to wind up with another Chris Collins in the county executive
office. There you go. And hopefully people remember when Chris Collins was running the county executive office, a lot of things that were not in the interest of African people and people who were in the marginalized communities in this county, the things that Chris Collins did as policy didn't work out very well for them.
Yeah, he closed clinics, he closed other facilities in the inner city and all that type of stuff. That any leeway he had over that, he tried to minimize things in the city so he could pave the way for more tax cuts, I guess. He never won a second term, so... we don't know, but that was. Just keep that in mind. Don't forget about that on Election Day.
Absolutely. Yep. Thanks, Ron.
Thanks.
Appreciate you. Was it Kevin or John next? Okay, let's get Kevin up from Pendleton. Kevin, how are you doing out there?
Hey, what's up, India?
Doing all right.
All right. I want to ask Tanky brother who just spoke here. What was his name again?
You're talking to Ron.
Ron, yeah, right. Because this is something I pointed out and discovered myself, that within Lynn Dixon's campaign, she has her person who's spearheading her campaign, the amount of money they're putting into that, but on top of that, the political advisor and the person who's managing that campaign also sold his shares. And why isn't he being held accountable? Why isn't the media holding this guy accountable? And his name is Chris.
Okay. But I think you're absolutely right. You know, there was a lot of discussion at the time about how many other people had been warned early enough that they were able to get out of the way to sell their stocks before the stocks fell as a result of that failed test.
And here the modus operandi is how these guys operate. They do wrong things that they get involved to, and what they do, they turn state evidence or federal evidence against the big fish. But they are big too, because you know what? Regardless whether you elect a Democrat or Republican for county, state, federal, you know whose lives go on as usual, and we have to catch our royal tails?
Mm-hmm.
You know who lives goes on?
Who?
The campaign managers and the party chairs and all those people.
Yeah, the insiders always rise above the crest of the waves.
Okay,
always.
But I digress. But I think it was an important point.
Yep.
And I hope you follow up. And I hope you follow up on that. Okay.
Yep.
Follow up on that.
We'll do. I got the note.
Okay.
I got the note.
But anyway, here's the reason why I call. I have two questions for you. But before I do, though, can you allow me to explain? The other day we didn't have time. We went off, and when I said, I made a statement and you say you didn't understand. When I said that whether it's Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, or whatever, they're the political Teflon dons. And I said that the Democratic Party was instrumental in helping the Republicans in creating the Republicans' version of an old Teflon don. Now, a political Teflon don is aptly described as, you just said earlier about Trump supporters, who Donald Trump could go on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and no matter what, they'll support him. Right.
Right. That's what he said.
Well, no. Well, yeah, but even if he said that, he's not saying anything that is not true, because we have the same version of that over on the Democratic Party.
Which is what?
With Joe Biden.
What did Joe Biden do that he's being Teflon about?
Well, what was his son doing on... what do you call it? Air Force Two. Whenever he did the vice president on a plane going to
Air Force One, right?
But is not Air Force One when it's the vice president. But you know what?
Right, Air Force Two when it's the vice president.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Right. Okay. In what capacity was he representing our interests here in America? Right. when he went to Ukraine and China and those other places where he now resigned from. You see what I'm saying? These people, they put their friends and family in place and to profit, right, for themselves and their families and their supporters or whomever.
I think you are correct in the sense.
Oh, I'm correct. Let me say what I say.
I think you're being correct about, right? What's his name? Hunter Biden got himself. He got himself onto the board of a company called Burisma, which is an oil and gas company in the Ukraine. He was receiving a paycheck from them as a board member of $50,000 a month.
Right.
He would not. My belief is that I can't say for absolute certain, but my belief is that he would not have gotten that directorship if he had not been the son of the vice president. But those are two separate issues, though. In terms
stay focused on this. The fact is,
you cut me off without understanding what I'm saying.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah,
it's two separate issues because Joe Biden went to the Ukraine to advocate for what President Barack Obama asked him to do, which was to join with the European Union and try to get the Ukraine to investigate and root out those people in their government who were taking resources that were being given to the Ukraine by the European Union and being proposed to be given by the United States, because those dollars were going into the hands of oligarchs in the Ukraine.
Yes.
So President Obama sent Joe Biden to the Ukraine to get to advocate for getting out the guy who was supposed to be their attorney general, to get him out of that office and get somebody in who would investigate. Now, that was in 2015. That was around the same time that Joe Biden's son became the director of one of the board of directors of BUSEMA. So those are two different things.
Okay, but I
just want you to know that the person who was appointed after that Joe Biden got one guy out of his office, the guy who was appointed to become the new attorney general, also failed to investigate corruption in that country. He didn't investigate a single person. And as a result of that, there was this this air in the European Union of why should we keep putting up $1.5 trillion of our money to help these people if they're not going to do right, you know, with that money. That's what that was all about.
Yeah, but I was saying, though, but in the meantime, though, Hunter has been hitching a ride along with Daddy on a number of these joints. Would you say yes or no?
He had been. Yes.
Okay,
exactly.
Good. And during this time, so I was saying. So
no different than Eric and Ivanka.
Okay,
you know,
right. Oh, you see how convenient. All right, good.
How was that convenient?
Good. Oh, convenient for you to say that now, huh? Okay, because you made sure you put that point in, but that's okay. But that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But that's fine. But the Teflon Dons, right? These are the Teflon Dons that I'm talking about, the political Teflon Dons. So
but remember, but it's not Teflon, because with Hillary Clinton, something that she should not have being stuck on her about the fact that she used her personal server during the time that she was working as the Secretary of State. She used her personal server rather than the State Department server. Mm-hmm. That's been reinvestigated over and over right into today. She's still getting Benghazi stuff right up until this day. So that can't be Teflon. But with Donald Trump commits 12 or 13 lies a day. He has done every kind of thing you can possibly do in the face of the public, and nothing happens to him as a result of that. That's what Teflon
nothing
is.
Nothing happens to Joe Biden. Just nothing happens to the Clintons. And I'm saying Trump will never be impeached, removed from office by being impeached.
I'm sorry, Kevin. We had that same glitch there, but I'll get back to you later on it. We'll talk about it next week. Let's get John in Rochester on before we miss up on this hour. John, how are you doing out there?
Hey, Nathan, I'm doing good.
Okay.
For flyover country, I'm doing good.
And didn't I speak well for flyover people just a minute ago?
Yeah, I heard you. Yeah.
You see, I didn't speak well enough.
But,
you know,
you didn't
have any enthusiasm for me.
The flyover people, as you mentioned, you say they get a double whammy from Trump. They support him, yet his policies hurt him. But that's not the case when you talk about illegal immigration. Illegal immigration is one of the reasons we have lawlessness. And probably more importantly is the fact that more low-income illegal immigrants coming into this country reduces the wages of low-income Americans.
See, John, the problem I have with you and others who continue to make this same statement over and over and over again, the only way that you would have a problem with these low-income workers is if the companies that hire these low-income workers didn't hire them. The reality is that if these people are coming here illegally, they don't have documentation, then how are they getting hired? It is American companies who are hiring these people against the law. It's actually illegal for them to hire these people, but they do it anyway, and they do it with impunity. And they get defended by people like Donald Trump. The people that you support are the people that defend the people that continue to do this stuff.
Most companies don't do that.
You can't get away with that statement.
Those people are
not coming here and hiring themselves. They're coming here and they're being hired by people
with false IDs. You can't discriminate if you've got so-called legitimate IDs.
So you're telling me there's 12 million people in this country.
As an employer,
that there are 12 million people in this country who are here working illegally with false IDs that nobody's been able to figure out.
Well, of course, there's a small percentage that employers are doing illegal activities, but that should be enforced.
All of the employers are doing illegal activities.
You were ticked off at Trump because he sent some people, Justice Department, down to Alabama and raided Alabama, a few corporations down there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my biggest supporter of against illegal immigration and the point I'm making about reducing low-income wages for Americans was Cesar Chavez, one of the most radical labor union leaders in history. He was the founder of the United Farm Workers. He saw the danger, and he fought against illegal immigration, and he formed vigilante squads to arrest.
What is the point? My point is that you would not have a demand for that illegal workforce if there was not a consuming grouping of employers who sought those workers and hired those workers.
They are in the minority, and they're going to get busted for it. Under Trump,
they've been doing this for 200 years. How are they going to get busted for it?
They went down to Alabama and busted those companies, and they're going to continue to do it.
And they didn't bust the companies. They busted the workers. They didn't bust the companies.
The flyover people, they see this. They see that Trump is looking in their best interest on illegal immigration, on the leftist communist side.
You're telling me that the farmers who are hiring these illegal workers at lower than minimum wage rates, they're the ones who object to these illegal workers.
I'm talking about American farm workers that are in the majority over the number of farmers. I'm talking about the working people.
All right. I hear you. John, you're not making any sense, but it's okay. I appreciate it. Listen, we got a lot that we need to talk about. I realize that there's a lot of diverse opinions on this stuff, but diversity of opinion has to be based on real facts. That's what we try to work with first. Start with the facts. We'll talk to you all next week. Go Buffalo Bulls. Get it done. Win today. We'll see you all next week here at Think Again. Think Again.
You've been listening to Think Again with L. Nathan Hare, sponsored by the Community Action Organization of Erie County. Be sure to tune in again next week at this same time for more Think Again.